and HP Enterprise Services. This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to talk about not missing out on the international investment opportunities. And to lead us in that discussion is Jerry Cannizzaro. Did I do that right, Jerry? I better do that, right? President, Retirement Planning Services, Inc., fellow seminar presenter, former Fed, and would-be Iron Chef, broadcast in Japan, and in Kiplinger's money, what is it, Kiplinger's personal finance?
Right? Personal finance.
Okay. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning.
And John Elliott, fellow seminar presenter, former Fed. Knower of all things benefits to help us out if we get a benefits question, and pretty savvy on finances too. Good morning, John.
My own sometimes. Good morning.
And Ann Vincent, what's your title again?
Director of Business Development for NITP. And good morning, Bob.
Okay, good morning, Ann. And Dorothy, our ever efficient engineer. And okay, Jerry. This is a fairly broad, you know, don't miss out on international investments. What are international investments? I know what U.S. investments are, so I guess it's everything non-U.S?
Well, that's about right. Everything non-U.S. is international, and you can take that almost to the point of maybe non-North American. But then again, they consider Canada to be international investing, as well as South America to be international investing. And so I guess it's anything but not U.S., okay? And that's a big piece of the world.
Huge. Now, when we talk about this, we're probably talking about the bigger companies, right? Are we talking like the huge companies, like the Standard & Poor's 500 companies or the Fortune 100 companies in each one of the countries?
Well, what you're talking about, first of all, I guess when you look at the Standard & Poor's Index, the 500 largest companies, every one of those does business internationally, everyone. So they all do business internationally. But you're really talking about countries outside of the U.S., headquartered outside the U.S., and they account for about 45% of the total net worth of the New York Stock Exchange. I don't think people realize that, but that's how big international investing is today.
Wow. Could we do this, I guess, at the top of the show, the Thrift Savings Plan has something called the iFund, I suppose, for international, and it's international stock. So what's in there? Is that a basket of indexes, or is it particular companies?
Well, the iFund is basically companies who are in different parts of the world. As the iFund index, okay, defines the different countries they want to be in, which I think are about 20 different countries that the iFund covers, okay, then these are companies that are within those countries. Okay, so that would be a basket of stocks that they would invest in, like any index. Here's what I pick to invest in this group of companies that you have in here. I basically represent what the international market would do for you. Okay, That's the theory, anyway.
Not to drive the listeners crazy, but if we have a U.S. company in the Standard & Poor's 500, could they own any of these companies that are in the basket in the iFund?
They could, okay, as subsidiaries, all right? They could do that. I mean, I'm not that familiar with each one of these owns, what they own, but if you go in, you have a big company and it owns something in Portugal, okay, and it's a subsidiary, then they would own it. And that company could be in that iFund index because Portugal's in the index.
Okay. As international funds or companies in general, would you say that's the proverbial wave of the future?
Well, I definitely think it is. And I think to make the case for international, you almost have to start domestically here. Because if you take a look at where we are domestically, okay, in our economy today, okay, we are, you know, very slowly coming out of this recession. And I think we're going to continue to come out very slowly in this recession. So where is the opportunity for investing? Okay, is it here domestically or is it internationally? Okay, internationally is growing far more, okay, percentage-wise, GNP, than our domestic economy, which might be at 2% year-to-date. But if you take a look at a couple of statistics here and you take a look around, you will see, you know, with our unemployment at 9.5% as it is, okay, and you're talking about, you know, a recovery that's based on employment, and you're talking about a recovery that's based on housing, and housing is, you know, way down there now and very slow to recover. How are we going to, okay, produce the kinds of profits, okay, and GNP that we need so that investors, okay, are going to put money into our domestic stocks? Whereas when you take a look internationally, okay, they're growing, okay, over there internationally. They don't have the same issues that we have. They haven't had necessarily the same issues, and they're doing just fine. You take Russia. Russia's GNP was up 6% in the first quarter. So, I mean, people don't think about Russia over there, but Russia also has, okay, the lowest, okay, debt, the GNP ratio in the world.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
What's gross GNP?
Gross national product.
Okay, so
total
that's
good of all services and products produced.
Yeah, I have a question. Okay. The iFund of the TSP, did that include Russian companies?
Does not.
Does not.
Does absolutely.
Does it include Africa?
That it does not.
Okay.
Okay,
so
let me...
Is it basically Europe, Asia, Pacific Rim, South America?
Yeah, what it is I have it here, the index. And if you take a look at the countries, you're talking about the highest weight percentage in the iFund is Japan. The second highest weight percentage is United Kingdom. Uh-huh. Then you go down to France, Australia, Germany, Switzerland, Spain, Italy, Sweden, etc., down lower and lower percentages. Okay. So basically, I guess you take a look at this, and when you look at this list of countries that it has, okay, I think what I look at right away is that I notice the absence of certain countries. And you notice the absence of anything in China, India,
wow,
Latin America, and Russia, which are one of the biggest, you know, biggest growth areas in the world today. And so, you know, the iFund is internationally, you know, poised, but it's not necessarily right now in the same places that it should be poised, okay, for long term. But it is, the iFund is a good fund. I think it's a good fund for federal employees to invest in. In my seminars, I recommend 25%, okay, of their equity allocation in the iFund. That's out of 60% in equities. So it's the highest percentage that I would recommend. And I think it is a good fund to be for all federal employees to be invested in long term.
So you're saying 25%
in the iFund. What if you have a high risk tolerance like I do? Could I go higher than 25% in your view?
I would say that 25% is, for me, about the top in terms of risk tolerance. I mean, you could go higher, okay, but a lot of people, you know, don't have a high risk tolerance. But if you feel that, you know, you want to go higher, you could.
Well, I'm thinking of the CSRS class. That if they don't have a higher risk tolerance, probably could. But that aside, I'm looking at the iFund, and I don't remember. I can go home and look very easily on the internet, tsp.gov, and find out what percentage of my L fund is in the iFund. And maybe if it's not 25%, I'm thinking maybe I need to get out of the L fund and do my own allocation, and you're nodding your head.
Yes. I think you probably ought to think about that, John, because I don't think that the L funds, okay, as structured today, have a high enough percentage in the I funds, both short-term and long-term, okay, to recognize what I think is going to happen, in the future, okay, as far as successful investing. I think the L funds are light on the international. It's one reason why I'm honestly not necessarily a fan of the L funds, okay, because I don't think that they have necessarily the right mix of what I think is going to occur in the future as far as making money in the overall marketplace.
Well, you've convinced me. I'm going to go home and make that change today.
Okay.
All right, let me throw this phone number out just in case somebody's listening like me that isn't tracking and needs to ask Jerry a question, or John, or Ann. Not me. 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080. Now, I'm saying this, and people should recognize that today is August 9th. We're at 10:15 Eastern Time. We will be off at 10:58 Eastern Time. If you're listening to it other than that time, don't call in, because no one will be here. But you can email us, and we'll do the email in a little bit. But again, 202-465-3080, and it's a good time to ask questions, because this is not a topic necessarily that people talk about at lunch, foreign investing. Now, Jerry, we got the iFund, and people should always try to maximize putting money into the thrift if they can. But for those that maybe have IRAs, for those that maybe have money outside, where would you advise them in general to invest if they like this international flavor?
Okay. I think there are several very good areas to invest in. If you have IRAs, the money that you're going to be putting into an IRA this year, okay, contributions, or if you have existing IRAs that are really not doing well, you can, of course, do a transfer of any IRA into another IRA with a transfer of asset form. It's very, very easy to do. Where I would go is Latin America. Latin America is one of the big areas today. It's on fire down there in Latin America. You're talking about Brazil. You're talking about Argentina. You're talking about Peru, etc. Down there, it is growing and growing rapidly down there. And so Latin America would certainly be one of the areas. Their GNP was growing about 6% for the first quarter of this year. Okay, and you talk about Brazil, especially. Brazil would be an area because of their oil that they have both on land and off the sea, and their all-around year agriculture that they have are growing very rapidly. Their big worry down there is about inflation, not about how rapidly they're going to grow. So I would definitely do Latin America, and you can do Latin America by buying a fund, okay, no-load fund that actually invests in Latin America. I wouldn't do this by individual company, I would do it by a fund.
That's too hard to do it by company, but is there a Brazil fund if we
really
enamored
with? Oh, yeah,
there's
two funds, if I can mention those. Okay.
Sure you can.
Fidelity has a Latin American fund that's very good, and we like T. Rowe Price Latin America fund, okay, that has done extremely well over the years. The second area I would be in is, of course, is emerging markets. Emerging markets are those areas like India, there's China, those kinds of areas. Indonesia is very big right now in terms of very growing very rapidly in Indonesia. And so you would be invested in the emerging markets. Now, there are emerging market funds. There's a lot of those right now. There's T. Rowe Price has a good emerging market fund, and you have Fidelity, and you have lots of different groups out there that have emerging market funds. So that's another area I would certainly want to be in. The other area, which is a little more concise, would be the Eastern Mediterranean, and what we call European and Eastern Mediterranean area. Now, that includes Russia. That includes Turkey. That includes Israel and those kinds of Poland, those areas over there, which are growing again very rapidly. And I can tell you that I think the T. Rowe Price Emerging Eastern Europe and Mediterranean Fund is up year-to-date 13%. Year-to-date 13. And so that would be in those three different areas internationally.
What makes them attractive? When I think of Russia, and maybe wrongly so, I think of minerals, oil, natural gas, because they supply a lot of Eastern European countries natural gas. But is there a country that you just ran through that makes things? Maybe not cars, but, you know, they make things.
Well, things, I guess you're right. Russia doesn't make lots of things right now. I mean, of course, China makes lots of things. And India makes tons of things. Okay, those are big manufacturing countries, and Indonesia, and Thailand, South Korea, okay, all of those places, okay, make, and Vietnam, they all make lots of things. Now, things could be clothing, things can be tools, things could be all sorts of, you know, different products like that. So they're big into things. Okay, Brazil is into oil, gas, that down there, and they're also into agriculture. They're very big into agriculture because in Brazil you have the economy down there. I mean, you've got a constant, level economy down there because the weather is pretty much the same, you know, about 90% of the time. So you can go down there as they are now. American farmers are buying tons and tons of land down there because I can grow cotton all year long. I don't have to wait through the winter to plant. I can just grow one crop and I can grow another crop and another crop and I can just keep on producing. And by the way, my labor cost is about one third of what it's going to be up in the U.S.
Okay, if I was squeamish about investing in a foreign country just because of, for whatever reason, but what you just said just struck a note, and I'm going to take a tangent. I don't know if you remember this comment. It was a number of years ago. You were on the show, and we were talking about high oil prices, and the railroads were becoming very popular, and the stocks, and I mentioned that to you, and you looked at me, and you said, no, buy the ball bearing companies. I just never forget that. So you just said something that hit that same note. American companies are going to buy land to grow the cotton. So if, I mean, this is very hard. You have to go to somebody like you, and I'm not being self-serving with that comment, but I can never research that. But would there be an American company? I'm not asking for the company, but if you were doing research, you know, they're involved with agriculture and they're really spending a significant amount outside the country buying land to grow the cotton most of the year, et cetera. Are there companies like that? Again, I'm not asking you for the company.
Well, there would be companies, if you're looking at agriculture, I mean, you'd be looking at people that produce agricultural machines that would be out there, you know, collecting the cotton, okay, planting the seeds. You could be talking about Massey Ferguson. You could be talking about Caterpillar. You can be talking about all these people who are big into farm machinery, mm-hmm. All right? You could be in the oil area. I mean, they're big in oil. I mean, Brazil just passed Venezuela, you know, in oil production. That's their domestic oil. Now, you know, they've got all this oil off the coast. And when they take that oil off the coast with their domestic oil and add it together, in 5 years, they'll be the fourth largest oil producer in the world. Okay, so this is just a little bit of what's happening down there. Of course, Brazil also has got what? The Olympics coming in. So what do you got? Olympics, you got infrastructure. You got concrete, you got rails, you got this and that. So I would think, you know, machinery companies, okay, would be a good investment. Okay, you know, as far as especially people who like Caterpillar, Massey Ferguson, who do a lot of exporting of machinery. Now you have to, of course, go up against other people like Japan and China on that stuff, but I mean, again, that's, I think that would be a good area. You could research this further, you know, down and down into, you know, who makes component parts of different machinery and different things like that, which is what you would do if you were going to buy an individual stock, let's say, over there. But again, broad based, that's how I would see it.
All right. This again is not self-serving, is not the reason for the show. The reason for the show is education. But if somebody came to you as a professional, I notice you say you're a fee only. I don't understand fee only from a financial planner that isn't a fee only. What's a fee only?
Well, fee only planner, okay, is a person that only gets their compensation from their client. So therefore, they make none of their compensation comes from any product, service, referral, or recommendations that they make. We do not work for commissions. Our motto is, you know, we work for you, not for commissions. So we don't make anything off of anything that we would recommend to them, and we don't make anything off of any, you know, people that we would refer to other people, such as yourself as a professional, as an accountant. If I refer somebody to you for their accounting services, you don't send me anything back. Could take a little piece of candy or two, but that's okay. We don't get any of that. But again, we do that because it's in the best interest of our clients.
I fully agree with you. I won't tell you. I, I don't want anything from anybody I recommend other than, I know that sounds corny, treating the client right, because I never want to be said that I took money and if something didn't turn out right, well, you got this and I got...
Yeah, well, we don't do that. Yeah. And, you know, and again, the only person does really truly work for the client, and that is that we can look at the client's situation, we can look at their needs, and we can make, you know, and give them advice that's best for them. So if my advice would be, look, I don't want you doing anything with your money on the market. Just go back in the back of your lawn, okay, and dig up a big hole and stick all your money in there and cover it up. That's the best thing for you because I don't want you doing anything else, all right? And that could be what I could recommend. I'm just kind of being a little facetious.
Well, that's my investment philosophy. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, I know. I mean, yeah.
You know that.
Yeah. Well, that's that no-risk philosophy.
That's right.
You know, that's what you call no risk, Bob. Yeah.
Okay.
But that's what a fee only is. And fee only also, the fee only that is the National Association of Professional Financial Advisors, which is called NAFA, is an organization that I belong to. And there are about 1,500 of us in the United States that take an oath every year, which we re-sign, that we will never take any compensation, okay, from any other source other than what our client pays us. And if we violate that once, we are out of that organization for life.
Okay. How does somebody get in touch with you?
Well, they get in touch with me through my website, which would be smarterdollars.com. That's smarterdollars.com. Or they can call me. It's Retirement Planning Services, Inc. And I'm allowed to give that number?
Yes. Sure.
Oh, okay. 703-716-1233. That's our number. Okay, and so you could call me there. You can go to my website. We always like people to go to our website first because at smarterdollars.com because it does tell them about who we are and how we do it. Okay, and after they look at that, they say, yeah, that's what we want to do. Then I advise them to pick up the phone, give us a call, and we'll give them the details.
That's SmarterDollars, plural.
SmarterDollars.
Yes.
.com?
.com, yes.
Thank you, Ann.
You're welcome, because I just want to make sure that they understood
you have
that
was your business development hat on.
Yeah. I do.
Mm-hmm. All right. Jerry, two weeks ago, Barron's, not that I'm a Barron's, but I like reading it. I don't understand three quarters of it, but I like reading it. And they had a whole thing on Africa. And, you know, that might be even an emerging market. And they were talking about China's trying to play a role and build some infrastructure because they have they don't have the proper infrastructure to grow like they might want to. But they were bullish, but they said there are risks.
Yeah, I would say there are risks in Africa. I think Africa's probably is going to be a good continent to invest in. But I don't know, honestly, that I would go there right now. I mean, I certainly wouldn't buy individual companies there because, I mean, there's not only financial risk, but obviously there's just overall risk, okay, over there and kind of staying alive risk, I call it. Okay, a lot of political unsettling over there in many different countries. You don't know who's in, you don't know who's out. And if you know who's in, you don't know how much of the money they're taking from the companies that are already in there. So you'd have to be a really good insider, okay, I think, to make money in Africa. I'm not saying potentially in the future. I think there are certain countries in Africa that would be, you know, maybe better off to invest in. But right now, I wouldn't, you know, necessarily recommend to my clients to invest there. There's one fund that I know of that invests in Africa, and T. Rowe Price has a fund that invests in Africa and other countries. Though it's not just Africa, it's also over in areas like Saudi Arabia and those areas. So it includes not only Africa, but those areas. And it has done okay, but it has not certainly done like, you know, the Latin American fund or the emerging market funds. So I'd say in the future, it's a good place to probably be. But you better, if you're going to put your money there, you better, you know, have it in a fund, I would say, and not individual. And you better be, you know, ready to wait for your money.
And talking about the Middle Eastern countries, which, of course, comes to mind, natural gas and oil. But are there any Middle Eastern countries that said, listen, we've got plenty of this, but eventually there's not going to be that much demand, not anytime soon. Do you see any of them reinvesting to produce, excuse the expression, things?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. We don't see them heading towards making things. You know, it's pretty much, you know, let's run the pumps and count the money and put it in the gold bars or the, you know, in the bank, or let's build some exotic hotel or resort or whatever. You don't see them putting it into a manufacturing for sure. And I honestly can't say. I don't know where these people will be 50 years from now.
Well, they invest a lot in companies outside of their own country.
Yeah, they have a big investment portfolio, that's for sure. Yeah. So they are putting their money in to different countries. Now, nowhere near China. Now, China is the big force today in the world, because China is investing all over the world. I mean, they are literally going. They're big in Brazil. They're big in Africa. They're big in all sorts of these areas. They are really putting a lot of money, especially in materials, commodities, etc. That's what they're investing in.
Do they do it as a government, or do they do it as companies, or do they do it as both?
Yeah, I'd say the last one would be both. I don't know too much how you separate, you know, a company from a country right now in China. I mean, you know, whatever a company does, for sure the country knows. And so I think it's probably, you know, definitely together. But you take a look at some of these investments. They're investing in Australia. They're investing in copper in Australia and other kinds of areas, iron ore and those kinds of things. And they're investing in all sorts of countries in Africa. Okay, and down in South America, they're just really everywhere. And what they're doing is they're going in buying up companies, okay, or pieces of companies that basically are, you know, have commodities. And okay, of course, they need a lot of commodities to drive their economy, and they don't all have it on their mainland. And so they're going to get a big piece of it. They're invested in Russia. They're just about all over the world.
If you step back and look at this, do you see the I could almost think of the Industrial Revolution here in the States, not that I was around then, but I do read books, and Anna's laughing. Yes, I've read five in my life.
No, I meant you said you were around for the, not around for the.
I just look it. So the what I'm hearing from you is this Industrial Revolution, re-industrial revolution, because some countries, their industrial assets are old. And sounds like these countries would then be creating things that other countries could, but the cost is too high. Labor cost, or just the regulatory cost, and you don't have the labor costs and certainly the regulatory costs in some of these other countries. And if they can produce product and it's of good or better quality.
Well, that's a good question. I mean, you know, a comment here about, you know, what. You know, obviously we know labor costs, okay, are low over in, you know, the China area, mainland, and all around China, Taiwan, and all those, Indonesia, all those areas, very low labor costs. Now, quality-wise, I mean, we can all just kind of look at that a little bit. I mean, again, I mean, everything you practically look at today is made in China. Now, the question is it good or is it just cheap? Okay, and, you know, again, if you want something that's cheap, then you can buy it, okay, because, you know, it cost you less. Let me give you an example of something that I recently bought that came from India. It was a mechanism that, well, you put it up on your wall in the kitchen and you put a roll of paper in it, you know, these paper towels. And it has two big ends that you screw onto to each end to keep the paper towels on as it's holding the holder. Well, I put this up on the wall and put the ends on, and I pulled a paper towel out, and both ends flew off. Now, the problem is, okay, that the person that did manufacture the screw part of that thing, that the things that the ends screw onto, wasn't in connection with the guy that was producing the ends that screw on. So he was smaller, and the other ends were bigger, and so, you know, this didn't work. And so I had to end up putting tape around it just to have this thing actually work as it was intended to do. Now, that was cheap, but it wasn't necessarily what I would call good. So you get these kinds of products out there, and I do think that one of the things we have to do as a country here is to get more of our to build up our manufacturing base to take a lot of these jobs that have gone overseas that we can do here, okay, and bring them back to the U.S. I mean, when you see made in the U.S., to me, that kind of gives me a chill because you can't find it hardly anymore.
That's true. I have a, I always leave people's names nameless, and he's of foreign descent, and he does good things in his country. And he was building a hospital, and he went to China to buy the chairs, tables, not necessarily the medical equipment, but the partitioning, the lighting, the ballast, and whatnot. And he said he was very happy with the quality. They weren't buying, again, the medical equipment, but they were buying the innards. Mm-hmm. For a fraction of the cost. Anyway, let's get back to this global issue. Let's see, we talked about the Middle Eastern. How about the Eastern European countries? What do we look for there?
Well, Eastern European depends on who you how you qualify that. And in Eastern European, if you take a look at the different funds out there that might cover it, that includes Russia, and it does include a lot of the emerging, what we call Eastern European countries, the Polands and some of those other countries that have been, you know, basically down but are coming back. They include Israel, they include Turkey, and they include lots of other areas over there. Could be Greece or whatever, and although, of course, Greece is not one of the big countries a lot of people move into, but it's mainly countries that that have not been had the high growth rate, like the France and the Germanys, et cetera. Okay, but the other countries that kind of are around it, okay, all the way from up around Germany on down through different areas. So you're talking about Baltic areas and other areas over in Europe that aren't normally included in other kinds of funds.
About the Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan, and is that more just oil, or do they have any industrial?
I don't know exactly everything that they have over there, but I think that's more, you know, basically oil, okay, rather than products. And let me just if I can quickly do this here and see if I've got it.
No, I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
Well, I just happened to have something.
I'd imagine you would if it wasn't in front of you. It's in your head.
So what we have here is a bunch of stuff. I'm just trying to look here and see what the Eastern, the T. Rowe Price Mediterranean Fund actually invests in terms of the number of countries it has. And I don't know if I brought that along, but I do know from having looked at that before that it is a highest percentage of that, okay, is in Russia, okay, and that's one of the big areas. Now, that Russia, I said, is growing rather rapidly over there, and so that's probably the leader of that group in Eastern Europe. Another area you got to be aware of here is that, you know, not a lot of people talk about is Canada. I mean, let's say if we consider Canada to be international, again, not being in the U.S., Canada is a great country to invest in. Okay, you've got a fund there, Fidelity Canada, which is a no-load fund. Okay, and Canada is a wonderful place to invest in because it has a very consistent and growing economy. And they have one of the strongest banking systems in the world, okay, in Canada. And here's the other good news, Bob. They still like us. It is one of the few countries that actually likes us. And so, you know, it's a good area to invest in. Fidelity Canada has been what I call like a steady Freddy, okay, as far as an investment. You put your money in there, okay, and keep investing in it. You're going to make yourself a really good return with a low amount of volatility. And so I like Fidelity Canada, and we recommend that highly to a lot of our investors to put some of that international money up in Canada.
Okay, is Russia becoming more diversified, and is that than they had, say, been 20 years ago? And is that why it's becoming a good investment?
Well, I think what's happening there, John, is that Russia is loosening its grip on a lot of the companies that Russia used to control as a government. And they're allowing those companies now to, you know, actually become, you know, real companies, that is, to make products, okay, and to sell those products in the world marketplace, without, you know, their, you know, direct intervention. And so I think that's what's really happening. So you are seeing more Russian products out, and a lot of the Russian products that they're doing is, of course, into the European community. That's where they're doing it. And that makes sense. I mean, right. Why have to ship it across the ocean if you can sell it over in Europe?
Okay, I'm going to go back across the ocean. You mentioned Canada. Mm-hmm. What about Mexico? Is that...
Yeah. It always, it kind of just come with Mexico. I mean, that's a scary place to me right now. I mean, I'd love to go down and visit Mexico, but, I mean, you hear about what's happening in Mexico as far as the killings and the cartel and all of this disruption down there. Mexico is a good country in terms of let's say, investing. I wouldn't want to, again, go in and invest just in certain companies in Mexico, but I would use the Latin American fund, which does invest in Mexico, to invest in. They've got, you know, oil production. They're doing a lot of manufacturing down there. If you take a look a lot of times at refrigerators and things like that, washing machines, if you take a look inside, you'll see a lot of the motors and the compressors and things were made in Mexico.
Is the industry in Mexico, is there a lot of it on the border with us? Because I remember when it was a NAFTA, there was just an awful lot of plants built, I thought, around that time to produce what used to be produced here. And they are owned by U.S. companies, but they sent their production there. And I don't know if we could get the same bang for the buck by buying the U.S. company that produces a lot of their product in Mexico.
Yeah, I don't know that. You know, the problem, I guess, with all of this is that, you know, since you don't know what's, you know, being manufactured and where it's going, it's pretty hard to go in and track a company that you might want to invest in Mexico. And say, I don't know, you know, I know what you make, but I don't know where it is. I mean, yes, I could invest in you because you make a lot of refrigerator compressors. So, yeah, all right, I can buy you for that. All right, but it's hard to get information out. There are analysts that follow Mexico, okay, but there's not, for instance, a Mexico fund anywhere, okay? Always Mexico is always put together with other Latin American countries, okay, as far as when you're looking at investments. There are some good companies down there, obviously, you know, oil, beverage companies down there, manufacturing companies. So I would say it's a piece of the basically South American, you know, manufacturing area, but I would not put it in individually. I mean, I would buy this through a fund rather than through an individual company.
Okay, I remember years ago, Telefono Mexico, and that was really good. It was a while ago. It was a really good stock.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we did Mexico, we did South America. You mentioned Australia, New Zealand, Australia. Minerals primarily there, or is there any industry there?
Well, there's minerals. There's certainly some industry there. I think a lot of the industry, though, that you see in you're talking about Australia, would be goods, again, that are probably used moreover in their area of the world.
How about wine?
Well, yeah.
Agriculture.
Italian wine over here, but
they could put a lot of that.
Movies
on the
and entertainment.
Well, they're good. I mean, you know,
all our actors are from Australia.
Yeah, well, and movie companies. There's the big business over there now, in renting out places for movies. Okay, because they've obviously got a lot of land out there and a lot of places you can build a big set out in the middle of it. You know, Australia's now got a little bit of a problem here. I was just reading in the Bloomberg Finance magazine before we came in here is that Australia is taking a look at a large locust infestation, which is, they say, it's going to ruin a major portion of their wheat, okay, production. And so that's going to be a little bit of an issue for them. Good for us domestically, but not so good for them. So there are goods, I think, that they make. Obviously, they're in the wine area. They're in the other spirits area. They have a lot of beverages.
When are the locusts coming?
Jimmy?
When are the locusts coming? Because we'll buy wheat futures.
Well, I tell you what, they're already there.
I thought they had a drought problem, too.
They've got a drought problem. But, you know, a lot of that, you know, they've got iron, they've got gold over there, they've got coal over there, they've got a lot of things. They manufacture a lot of things, but they use them in their country. And they also, you know, of course, export them. Closer to where they are rather than, but, you know, thank God the wine comes across the ocean to us, right, Ann?
Yes.
Thank goodness for you two.
Yeah, right.
All right. Now, could I play the, I always do this every show almost. Let's say that I'm a beginning career Fed and I've maxed out my thrift. Now I want to put some money into a traditional, maybe I can put it into a Roth IRA. What's my balance, Jerry? And I, let's say I have moderate risk. I'm not going to be real risk averse or real risk go for it.
Well, a new Fed, you know, somebody maybe in their 20s or something.
Late 20s, early 30s.
Okay. I mean, my maximum allocation to equities of any type is 65%. I'm just not going to go beyond 65% because if you look at the studies – okay, they show that if you put any more money and then 65% of your overall portfolio in equities, okay, all you get is more volatility, but no more, you know, risk. I mean, no more return. You get your risk, but you don't get a comparable amount of return. So why put any more money, okay, where you can't get at least a higher level of return? So I would put in 65%, okay, again, I keep to the same proportion. I mean, I would talking about probably 25% in international, 25% probably in the small and medium-sized companies, which would be the S fund equivalent in the TSP, and then the rest of that in the C fund, okay, the large companies. But I'm going to concentrate more in the S fund and the I fund, that's for sure, because when you take a look at the stats, okay, you're going to see that that's where the money is being made. Now, that's another area that, you know, that is going, that's coming back real strong. When you take a look at, just to digress for a minute here, when you go into the international area, one of the things you can do here is to even diversify more internationally, and that is instead of just picking out different areas, different countries to invest in, how about small and medium-sized companies in those various areas? Because small and medium-sized have always gone up faster, stronger, and longer than the large companies. Okay, that's true here in the U.S., and it's true internationally. So what we do is also in the LK advisor clients to put some of that international money into small and medium-sized international companies, and there are funds out there that do that, and they do it very well. And when you look at those okay statistics and look at their indexes year to date, you're going to see that they're even ahead of the overall international market.
So a young Fed, you're saying, just to make sure that we've all got this straight, should be 25%, say, in the I fund, mm-hmm. 25% in the S fund, the small cap fund, mm-hmm. and for a total of 65%.
15% C.
15%, that's what I was getting at. Yeah. And the rest in bonds.
Rest in bonds and in the G fund. So the rest
not
would
the
be
F fund?
It would be 25F, okay, and then the rest of that would be in the G fund.
So you would be in the F fund.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, because that's done pretty well.
Oh, that's done better than most people, you know, even
dreamed
well,
of.
They know. I mean, when you go into seminars, I ask people, you know, what the F fund is, you know, what the TSP. You know, and people kind of look at me and they look kind of blank.
Yeah.
And I said, well, you know, what's the F fund? And somebody put their hand up the other day and says, Jerry, it's the federal fund.
Actually,
I said, what? They said it's the federal fund.
It's about half.
Well, it's close
about
to
half
it.
Corporate bonds.
Yeah, I mean, you know what it is. It's an agri. Yeah, it's
close to it in the
bonds.
Alphabet.
It did very, very well.
It's only 10% in the G fund.
Yeah, and yeah. I would put only the rest of that in the G fund. I mean, G fund's about 3.2% government guaranteed. You can't beat that anywhere.
Let's go to. Can I go to retirement?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Oh. No, let's go to mid-career. Pet. Let's go mid-career, and then we'll go to retirement.
That is my mid-career.
I thought this was the beginning.
Well, mid-beginning to mid. Beginning to mid, Bob.
Okay, we skip mid. All right.
Yeah, yeah, we're going to skip mid.
Thank you for moving along, John.
Mid and, yeah.
So let's go to just pre-retirement and certainly retirement proportions of...
Okay. So what I'm going to do in a person's retired, you get 20% I, 20% S, 10% C, and then I'm going to put in 35% F and 15% into the G fund.
So you're still, for a retired person, is about 50, 60% in equities?
50%, yes.
50%, yeah. And, and I've heard that before, that if you get out of equities too soon, you might live to be in one of what Willard Scott Smucker's jars someday.
Well, you absolutely. I mean, you know, if you retire today at 65, on average, a male will, you know, projected to live to 85, and a woman is projected to live to 87. So, I mean, you know, how quickly can you take your money and roll it into CDs? Because the biggest problem, okay, in the future is going to be, you know, the effects of inflation. Okay, inflation is low now, but inflation is not going to stay low. And, you know, retirees have to worry about inflation because all the things that they buy, okay, the goods and the services that they buy and the services they need have always gone up more than inflation. Take a look at long-term care. Long-term care is going up 5.5%, maybe 6% a year. Okay, take a look at the 10 top drugs used by retirees 65 and older. In the first quarter of this year, they were up an average of 10%. I mean, so you can't be putting your money in too conservatively or you're going to have inflation. It's just going to whittle down
your
money.
You use more medical as you age, inevitably.
Absolutely.
For everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And... even though we've had 2 years of deflation, we're looking at a second year in a row, medical costs, correct me if I'm wrong, are still rising.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, if you look at medical costs and they are still rising, look at the pharmaceutical companies. Do they really care, okay, about inflation or not? Look, if you got the hurt, they got the pill. That's what it all amounts to. I mean, you're going to pay for it, right? And so, you know, if it went up 10%, you're going to find the money somewhere to pay for that pill or that medication. So, I mean, they don't look and see, you know, if they're going to raise, you know, the cost of their drugs, okay, if that's going to hurt you, that's business with them. And let's hope you've got the money from somewhere, someplace to go ahead and buy those.
Jerry, I'm going to go home and get the shovel and dig up a couple of those coffee cans. And if I was to put money into the F fund now, am I anxious because, like John says, we've had deflation and very low interest rates? Interest rates are the death nail if they go up of the F fund initially. Is that right? I mean, I don't.
Well, Bob, just looking here at the performance of the F fund for the last 12 months, it's 9.02%.
Yeah, that's because interest rates are low.
Does that sound okay?
Well, it does.
I mean, you know, the
F
fund has only lost money twice, I think, in the last 20 years.
And not very much.
And not very much. I mean, I think, you know, the F fund would be okay. I mean, don't put it in the cans. Put it in the F fund and you'll be okay. Because, you know, bonds.
Two cans, okay.
Two cans, right. Yeah, okay, right. The G fund in one can and the F fund in the other. But I think the bonds are always a place to be, okay? It's a defensive posture in your long-term investing. You've got to have money, you know, to preserve your money when the market goes down. You've got to have enough equity to make money when the market goes up. But, you know, the market for sure is going to do two things. It's going to go up and it's going to go down. So you got to be preserved, you know, both and invested both ways.
Okay. John moved us to the pre-retirement, which was great. Now, let's say somebody's sitting at pre-retirement and they've got a pot of money and they need a certain amount. What's a fair percentage to take out of the principal considering inflation? So if you were to take out 3 or 4%, not that I'm loading the answer, would that carry somebody for a certain number of years through that magic 85 or 88?
Yeah. Okay, I tell you what we would advise.
Yeah.
Okay, when you run the data and you run the data like this, okay, through something called a Monte Carlo simulation model.
Can I go to Monte Carlo with the money?
You could. You could. I'd go with you. Okay.
Okay.
You wanted a Monte Carlo simulation model. And you put in certain, let's say, assumptions. Let's make some assumptions here. Let's say you're retired at 65. Okay, let's suppose that inflation's 4.5% average. Okay, let's just say that long term. Okay, let's suppose that you want the money to last for 30 years. All right, and let's suppose that you have an average rate of return. Average rate of return is 8% on the money, okay, for that 30-year period of time. You can take out a gross 5%, net 4%. Net 4% means you've taken the tax rate. Oh, okay, let me give you the tax rate, 20%. Effective tax rate now, not marginal.
No,
effective
tax rate.
Okay,
but
let's
the
take
listeners
effective.
May
so
not
I can take
know
out 4%, gross 5. Okay, when you take out gross 5, you pay your tax, and you offset it for inflation each year, means you can take out 4% according to the simulation model and have that money last for 30 years. And at the end of 30 years, all the money's not gone. Okay, about one-third of the money in today's dollars is still left in the pot.
Okay.
So that's what the simulation shows, and that's kind of what I recommend in my seminars. I honestly recommend that you not go over that gross 5, net 4, and the probability on that is 99%.
Okay. And with a good mix to create the 8% rate of return.
Yeah, and the mix I would use is what I mentioned before, the 50% in the stocks, 35% in the bonds, and 15% in the cash. That's the mix we use for that.
Okay, and that gets back, I think, gives John's answer a bullseye, right? Somebody yeah. pre-retirement, but somebody younger, again, going back to them, they have to harvest the wheat early so that they can afford a little more risk.
Well, they absolutely
later on.
Do, yeah. Bob, yeah. Because, you know, the FERS, system, okay, retirement system, does count a lot on those people in that system being able to not only invest in their TSP, but being able to maximize and make money in TSP. And that's what I think they need to do in order to have a good, you know, retirement plan by the time they actually decide to retire.
Sure. And as they age, hopefully their income will be greater than their expense needs, probably later on in life, not midway through or three quarters of the way through because of schooling, kids growing up, et cetera. But once they've gone on, hopefully we don't just throw the money away. We invest it.
Oh, absolutely.
And we call you up and say, Jerry, give me generic advice, but I know you're not going to sell me anything.
Yeah, we're here.
Okay, John, final issues?
Well, I've learned an incredible amount today, and it was just great information. And to the extent that I'm going to go and change my investment strategy based on what I heard today.
And listeners, John is a very sharp individual.
Well,
well read. Yeah, you are. Yeah. And?
Okay. I'm just fascinated with agricultural products, not only in Australia, but also in Argentina and Chile.
Wine products?
Yes.
Okay.
So I may be looking at the Latin American market.
You and Nancy.
Okay.
Okay. Jerry, final comments?
Yeah, final comments is I would say for federal employees, definitely take a look at the F Fund. It is a good long-term worthwhile investment, and don't say like one some person said in my class the other day, I don't want to invest internationally because it's un-American.
Okay. All righty. I'm going to get my shovel out, but Ann, who's on next week?
Tammy and you will be discussing what to do if you're about to retire.
All righty. Thanks for listening today. Tune us in next week or listen to the archive shows. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.